With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's a brand new show. That's exciting, isn't it? It's a new concept. Basically, I emailed, WhatsApped, messaged lots of our contributors and said, what's your favourite season supporting Liverpool? So maybe not necessarily the most successful one or the one where you went to the most games, but it's just the one where you had the most fun and the one where you look back and go, do you know what? That was a brilliant time to be a Liverpool fan. I had a scream. I've got loads of stories. And it was just really kind of summarised to you what it's all about being a Liverpool fan. Lots of people answered, as you can imagine. It's something that we're all passionate about. And thankfully, lots of our contributors gave different seasons. And so we're pooling everyone together. We're trying to get everyone together. We're going to try and do them in one hit, probably over a few beers. This first one was definitely over a few beers. And just relive some of those brilliant Liverpool seasons with the people who loved them the most. This is the first one. This is 2001. It was chosen by John Macken, by Kev Sampson, and by Kev Walsh. They all picked 2001 as their favourites. So you're going to hear part one of this. We're going to put part one out for free. So this is a little bit of a taster. Well, I say a little taster. It's fairly long, but this is a taster of not just this season, but what the whole series is going to be about. So this one's for free. The rest of them will be available for subscribers. So if you enjoy them, make sure you download the app. You'll get some free tokens. You can maybe enjoy the later parts as they come over the next few weeks, or dive in to some of the other stuff that we're doing as well, or even subscribe. We do are keen for everyone to support us in any way that they can. So without further ado, let's get going. This is 2001, as told by the people who absolutely loved it. It's John Givens with a new show for the Anfield Wrap. It is my favourite season. We are recording this in the beautiful location of Matal. We are in June. I think it is June, yeah. But the sun is shining. It is absolutely beautiful. And it is one of the best places in Liverpool to be on a sunny day. And one of the best places to recall a fantastic season. And I can't think of three better people to recall any season with, to be honest with you, but certainly the one that they have picked as their favourite. I've got Kev Walsh, I've got Kev Sampson, and I've got John Macken, or as he's known in Europe, Johnny Macken, Liverpool FC. We'll come on to that. The story of this show is...
Sweet when you say that, by the way.
The story of this show is... it came out of a pipe between me and Kev, actually, where we talked about, you know, a show where we could really get into the footy of our favourite time supporting Liverpool and really get into the games and the seasons and really what it is to be a Liverpool fan and to live these seasons where it feels like sort of everything's possible. So here we are. And then I emailed / text a lot of our contributors and asked them to pick their favourite season, and we're sort of going to group them all together, but these three gentlemen have all picked 2001. So first of all, I'll start with you, Kev. The most obvious question is, why did you pick it?
So by any standards, I would say that I am the most exuberantly positive person in any room at any given time. I'm delusionally
annoyingly so
delusionally
say,
upbeat.
Yeah, I would.
So when we won the league in 1990, it just never entered my head that was going to be the last one for nearly 30 years. You go into the following season thinking business as usual. But of course it didn't pan out that way. And at the same time, you know, there was the rise of, obviously, you know, Wenger's Arsenal. But more than anything, it was what was happening at Old Trafford. So as we were entering into this decline that seemed to go on for quite a long time, they were on the rise. And yet, you know, I've never gone to any game expecting us to get beat, and every season I would start expecting us to win the league, and the 90s wore on and on and on, and we were getting no nearer, and they were ticking off league title after league title. So the arrival of Gerard Houllier was, you know, symbolically, when we look back now, I think stopped that demise and started what you could see as being the rebirth of the new Liverpool. It was a stepping stone. And, you know, we frankly, you know, we had some players in that squad, in the, you know, most of the 90s that you wouldn't recognise as being worthy of being Liverpool players. And I remember, like, the previous season, like, he brought in people like Sammy Hippier, for example. I think Haman came in that season.
Same season.
So the process was set. But for me, really, the rebirth of the Reds and what leads us to being where we are today, you know, with a team to really, really be proud of, started in that season. And this is coming from somebody who's been around a little bit. But it's just, there is just so much that went on in that 2000-2001. But it is, I'm sure the other lads will agree, like, it's symbolically, like, it's the rebirth of the new Reds there.
Johnny, where do you figure?
Yeah, pretty much same as Kev there, but I do take umbrage with what a few people say about the 90s as being a completely barren period. It was still pretty good. It wasn't good enough for us, but it was still good. We nearly won the double one season. We've never finished lower than eighth
in 60 years
since promotion. So, the club never fell into like a decline. Like previous teams that had won the European Cup had been relegated as well. We've kept at a good level for most of the 90s. Not good enough for Liverpool FC, but that 2000-2001, everything just seemed to click. We got together a cracking little squad. We did buy some duds. There were a lot of players who came in that era who never made it and were never ever going to make it. But there were some cracking little signings in there. Upia, like you say, one of the greatest centre halves I've ever seen play for Liverpool. Gary McAllister, who came the summer before this and just seemed to gel that midfield into just a cracking little machine.
Yeah, very, very important sign, and we'll get on to him, definitely, won't
we? Sure, we will, yeah. And the reason I love that season more than most, it's the closest I've ever come to a full house. I did 61 out of 63 matches.
Unbelievable.
Some go on that.
Tranmere, I couldn't get a ticket for Tranmere.
I couldn't get one for Tranmere.
I love no money, couldn't get one.
I had loads.
Well, it's the way your local team, Kevin.
They came out with the Widow Gazette, didn't they?
And I can't remember what the other one was, but I've got a feeling it was Leicester away. But because that was midweek and Leicester's a swine of a place to get back from midweek.
It just seems such a shame. I think we can see Prenton Park from where we are. Yeah, like you probably just about seen it.
I went over to try and get one and ask him round. They were going for like 70 quid, and that was like 10 times face value. So I just got the bus back into town and watched it in the pub.
Yeah. I mean, Kev, you're a little bit younger than these boys, so you'll probably have a different story, but why have you picked this year?
Mine is more to do with like a coming of age than the actual football. Football obviously very much feeds into it, but I just turned 17 at the start of this season, and I just become matchmates with the likes of yourself and our other good mate Ben. And it was I've always said that growing up, all I ever really wanted was matchmates. I used to go to match with my dad, and he'd see him with all his mates. And one of the things I used to love, we'd be standing on the cop, and like it seemed like a never ending string of fellas would walk past. I like Paul. To my dad, and I used to think that's just the coolest thing in the world. Like, so many people, and I always think I'd just love one day to be just on the cop and just someone walk past, like, oh, like Kev, you're all right, just a little nod or something like that. And this is the season where I first really got that. Just turning 17, obviously, you're on the aisle and that, but also the football, like you, John just said there, it was, you didn't call the 90s a balance spell. For a kid my age, it was the end of the earth. Do you know what I mean? It was the absolute end of the world.
But I'd had all those years before.
Well, that's it. So because like it's mad, isn't it? The way you think about time changes the older that you get. So 8 years to you when you're 17 is half your life almost. Years to me now is 5 minutes ago. Do you know what I mean? You see things. That's not 8 years ago. I could tell you what I was doing right outside that ground.
Yeah.
But at that stage, I was the difference between a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old. Do you know what I mean? Felt obviously you're not a man at 17, but you feel like you're at. So that feeling of being good at football again as well was so big to me, because the biggest thing for the 90s for me is we just never beat Everton. Like, we've probably got like 3 or 4 wins throughout the whole 90s, it seemed.
Yeah. It's probably worth saying as well, in the context of the 80s, is the emergence of the Champions League, like throughout that, when you think that we had won the European Cup more times than any other British team, but we never championed. I mean, the end of the previous season, we had to beat Bradford, didn't we? Yeah. And to get the point to get into the Champions League for the first time, I managed to fluff our lines. So that was important as well, because
we finished fourth in a two-horse race a few seasons previously. Yeah, by not so Chef Weatherway as well.
There's all of that, and for all those reasons, I think, you know, the signings that happened. I mean, John mentioned McAllister. We also brought in Nick Barmby, who turned out to be a, you know, certainly I'll always remember him for the goal against Everton.
How long could Tesky been there by this season?
Well, he comes in the March before.
Do you remember we'd agreed to sign him for, was it 8 million? 8.2 million at the end of the season. And then because it was before the days before transfer windows, then we then agreed 9 million or 11 million or something for him.
Because I know we didn't buy him in the summer, but I'm always.
He comes in March just before.
That's a signing that may well have turbocharged this season, because he didn't necessarily hit the ground running when he first came to Liverpool, did he? There was a few things. I always remember his first few games, like he was going down easily in the box, and the whole cop was like, no, lads, this is not for it. We don't want that type of thing. Yeah. And which is a weird thing when you think about fans moaning about one of the players trying to win a penalty. Yeah. But that was the way it was. But then at the start of this season, he was just bang right in there. And then he was the foil then for either Fowler or Owens throughout the season, weren't he? Whereas if he'd have probably signed in that summer, you may have found that he didn't quite get there at that point, and Fowler wasn't fit at the start of it. So the fact that we have managed to get him, probably if he signed in March, only 10 games or something, isn't it? Yeah. But that's probably then fired us on to what become one of the most historical seasons in the club's history.
And then the other prong, although we never sadly saw the best of him, was the magnificent Yari Litmanen.
He comes halfway through the season.
So and then just to finish, I mean, Stefan Onco comes, does he?
That the same time as Hoopier, yeah. So he's the.
So he's already there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Christian Ziger.
Babel. So Ziger's halfway through the season as well, isn't he? Because we have made the time to get him in. Yeah. So he signed it later on. The summer window is.
It's Diarmid, McAllister, Arfex said Babel, Barmby, and then like you say, Ziger, and there's Gregory Vignal as well, who doesn't do great things for Liverpool, but is part of the Gary McDavid.
Oh, very, very, very important.
And then Igor Biskan comes halfway through, he comes in December.
Came in December, didn't he?
Yeah, it was unbelievable goal along to Crystal Palace as well. I always remember that one in the five.
But it's mad when you do the outs from that summer, because these players, some of them seem like he must have left like 5 years before, but it just shows that, you know, you're talking about the 90s and some players you shouldn't have played for Liverpool. So the outs that summer are like Bjornaby, Babb, Thompson, Matteo, Friedel, Song, Staunton, Meyer, who does it last on, Kamara, and John Newby. But like some of them, you're like, you can't imagine them crossing over with Sam Hoopier, well, like, but
that,
he did.
Yeah. That goes back to what Kev says before, though, of this season seeming to be like a jumping off point for a whole new Liverpool. Like them players you just mentioned there are synonymous, some of them. Thanks to Bjornaby and that. Think of Bjornaby, I think of the cross for Ruddock in the 3-3 against Man United, which seems like a lifetime before this, doesn't it? But those players are like the old Liverpool, and then you saw about your Anchos, Hoopiers, Nicky Barnes.
Every single one of them an upgrade, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Whereas in the 90s, it seemed like sometimes we were trying to upgrade, but whenever we came, we just stood on a rake. This was didn't it? Every time we tried to play.
Yeah. Well, that's how you felt about us in the 90s generally, Kev. You know, I've put a bit of context here saying, you know, you mentioned the Bradford game. They actually only got 2 points from the last five games in the league. The season before this, you know, it's not just Bradford. It's they just needed a couple of wins from those last five games, and they drew two and lost three.
Yeah,
and
just horribly,
it just really
horribly
cemented your thing where of. These lads aren't to be trusted. That's how you fell through Drew Evans, and then the start of Julia is that, like, there's some players there, but you can't trust them.
No.
A bit more.
And there was also, you know, that period of going into the Norway market, wasn't there? The likes of Leonards and Bjornaby, as Kev just said, you know, there was clearly, like, there was a trial and error period. But it just felt, I think, all four of us are saying the same thing. It felt like suddenly there was clarity, there was focus, there was a plan, and you felt confident that Julia, you know, was now, you know, completely in charge of the whole kind of strategy. And it felt like going into the start of that season that we were gonna, you know, we were gonna kick on.
You got the impression that Julia knew the players he wanted, that he knew how to find them, because tentacles all over the European coaching system and scouting systems.
Julia at that stage as well. Look, it seems to me we've always been a club that's idolised managers, and I don't think Evans really ever had that adulation. Very much respected, but just wasn't such a godlike figure. And people a bit younger maybe listening to this thinking, I'm not sure Julia's seen like that. I can tell you at the time, he very much was. Like, he was, I remember thinking, oh my God, I thought about Julia very much in the same terms I thought about Klopp and nearly on this stage, and it didn't quite go that way for him. But I tell you what, he wasn't a million miles away from him.
Do you think we, as a club, we treat our managers different to other clubs?
I like, do, yeah.
A million percent.
Yeah.
I think
a famous quote, Alex Ferguson once said that their fans,
sometimes
fans,
to their detriment. I think we sometimes give them a god complex. Yeah. You know, because managers generally don't get the name sung.
No.
I mean,
was half our songs were about Julie. Yeah. Who let the Reds out?
Who let the Reds out? Was such a tune.
It was a banger, wasn't it?
Yeah. we had French flags with his name on and stuff like that in the grounds, and we've had the same with Klopp. Now, I think
testicule de chien.
That was a good one as well.
Bollocks.
They were just all like anything with Julie. Just felt like this man knows what he's doing. And you say about United, it felt like a battle between him and the fans, didn't it, with Ferguson? And you look at it now, and listen, his legacy in the football teams is fantastic, but there's a lot of their fans who are saying, well, you've done nothing to get rid of the cancer that is the Glazers in their club now. And I just think if he was a Liverpool manager, he'd be deified even more if it's possible for it to be.
Yeah.
Whereas Gerard Houllier is probably a mistake away to Leverkusen when he takes a man off from maybe a European Cup that year.
Following season, and
a couple of times in the league where if he'd have just been a little bit more adventurous, we might have gone a little bit further. And it's a toss of a coin. And going to Barcelona, we were 3-0 down in the away leg, weren't we? And Klopp, we were 4-0 in the home leg. But in that game, after we went 3-0 down, Barcelona have a great chance to make it 4-0. And remember Messi, Bollock, and I think it was Dembele, whoever it was, for not doing it. And these are the small differences. And I think there was probably a few small differences at the time that take Julia away from being what people would think of Shankly, Paisley, Dalglish, and now obviously Jürgen.
One other thing I wanted to mention, I'll go to you, John, before we get into the season, you know, sort of month by month, is the other bit of context for maybe younger fans or newer fans is to remember from this is a season, obviously, you know, you'll have to do spoilers, we end up winning the UEFA Cup. In the 90s, Liverpool hadn't done much in Europe at all, you know, from my memory, and you know, I was young, but there's obviously the Auxerre night, which is quite famous, but doesn't lead to much. And then there's a year where they get to the semi-finals of the Cup Winners' Cup and go out to Paris, but you look at the teams they played on the way there, and you know, there's not much to sort of write home about, really, a lot of Scandinavian teams. So it is worth saying, if you just forget about everything else this season and focus on what they do in Europe this year, it'd be enough to call it a brilliant season, because it won't come before.
Absolutely, my favourite season following Liverpool in Europe. We just went to from one end of Europe to the other, literally, you know, from Bucharest right out to the
and with a lasting relic from one of the trips just over there in the Museum of Liverpool, which I'm sure we'll get onto as well.
They took me away for a John Lennon back in there for some reason, I don't know why.
This talked about the
rang me up and said, would you mind? I went, what, John and Yoko? Oh, go on then. But yeah, that season in Europe was just amazing. It was just brilliant trips, one after the other. You know, first time I'd ever been to Barcelona. Was it Roma? Bucharest,
Porto, Porto and the pouring rain.
It always rains in Porto.
Liberec was mad, you know, when you look back at how enormous European football is across the board, you know, it was three competitions, but again, I'm sure we'll get into it, but that ground held about 8,000, didn't it?
Yeah, it didn't have one side, was just a row of trees.
Yeah, and to get to it, you walked along a stream for about a mile, there was a station, and you got off, and it was, you know, it was a yard or two wide, and you were walking along this, just ridiculous, but that's the brilliance of the lower competitions in Europe, is that
you spoke to Olympiacos that year?
Oh, I did.
Because we hadn't really had much of those like wildly Mediterranean, you know, flares going off, smoke bombs, you know, even the police trying to batter you. And it was, we were on our toes, because they were basically pelting us with bits of concrete, golf balls and things, and the police were just standing there going,
I remember watching it on the telly, because back, like I say, back in them days, it's 20 odd years ago now, like, but remember watching the footage of it, and remember when you're watching on the telly, it was always like rubbish cameras, like they wouldn't send like the HD cameras, obviously didn't have HD then, but you know what I mean. It was like a relic from the past, even watching it. But I remember the noise in the ground,
it was amazing.
I just thought, oh, that's a bit of me, that, because I didn't do any of the European many of the European away that they started to say I was only 17. I think I literally just got my first passport, you know, to go on a lad's holiday at the end of the season with the kids from school. Yeah. But that Olympiacos one in the ground, it just looked unbelievable.
It's one of those ones that you feel just alive while you're in there, and then when the final whistle goes, you think, oh shit, yeah, how can we get out of here now?
There was a few that season, weren't there? Full time at Rome was,
Amazing, yeah. But we had enough there, we had over 8,000, so.
Yeah.
We were never in any danger.
Should we start way back?
We start from the beginning. It's a very good place to start.
Well, we started where we ended the previous season, didn't we?
Well, we did, yeah. We'll get into August then. So, yeah, we started beating Bradford. Putting that to rights in a way. It's a 1-0. Then there's a 2-0 defeat at Arsenal when Gary Mack gets sent off first half.
That's right, yeah.
Herman gets sent off second
travesty.
Half.
Travesty.
Was it travesty? Yeah.
Monday night, I remember being in the...
Well, it's the Monday after Bradford, which is mad, isn't it?
It's honestly a mad one.
To play Saturday and then Monday for no real reason.
That's crazy, isn't it? But that's one I remember being down there. We were decent, and then somehow the referee just loses his head because Vieira gets sent off for Haman tackling him at the knee. Vieira gets the ball, Haman tackles him at the knee, and then Haman gets sent off later on. It must have been an even enough thing for the least yellow card you've ever seen, and even then you couldn't rescind the yellow card. But in that one, did he rescind it because it was that idiotic? I remember coming out of that ground like thinking, we've been fucking robbed here. I was absolutely fuming.
But I think the upside to it though was we were good, you know.
We were
good that night, and so many times, like I can remember one of the kind of stepping stones to getting to that point of being good was again when Hooley came in, and we got a 0-0 draw about two seasons before. Early, I remember like Carragher playing as a centre back and getting a 0-0 there.
We beat them a couple of seasons before as well. Do you remember the Titi Kamara goal in the green kit?
Yeah.
That on a Sunday afternoon. That was another one where you thought there's a little bit about this team because we were struggling against big teams like United. We hadn't beat them for ages up until 99. In fact, it must have been 99 the same season that Kamara scores because this season's
the first year we beat United.
Yeah, it definitely is. So
99 the season before, actually. Sorry, we didn't beat United. We drew 1-0, but the Paddy Berger scores a late free kick. Because that was my first ever title tap, and that was in the same.
I think we took the lead from Paddy Berger free kick, and they spawned an equaliser.
That one we wore at Arsenal, where we got beat this season, was terrible. That gold thing,
yeah,
it just was horrible.
We've got a history in it.
It only looked good on like.
But Arsenal, anyway, we should, you know, we definitely didn't deserve to get beat by them, and felt that every decision that could have gone against us went against us. But on the right, it was a Monday night. I remember being on the train back the next day, in the company of the great Lenny Wilcox. And he was on top of the world. Lenny Woods
or Bobby Wilcox, or maybe it was both of them.
Sorry. Bobby,
I know they were close.
Bobby, it was Bobby.
You never married as far as I remember.
Some love child, that was it.
Christ.
Bobby in his white vest. And he was very excited. He was saying, we've got our Reds back. I felt that was a bit odd in the context of having been beat, but it turns out that he wasn't that far.
Yeah, but you can see, when you've been to that many football matches, and you can see beyond the result, can't you? Some games you lose, and you know we played bloody well there.
Yeah.
You can see that. There's a sign.
So, I mean, a hallmark of this season is lots and lots of false dogs. We go and like we'll win a couple, then we'll lose a stupid one. And
well, the next one's that in that season, because we go to Southampton, we go 3-0 up.
Oh,
we
look brilliant.
Mario Pajas, mate, fucking
Schmitz's three assists, and then we end up drawing 3-0, which is like sort of sums us up at that point.
For me, just on a personal note, that was the first away game I took my lad Joe to, and it's a lengthy drive, and you know, obviously, if you drive
it's even longer back if you do that.
So when we get 3-0 up with maybe, 15 minutes left, 20 minutes left.
That wasn't long ago, was
it?
It's the old Dell as well, you know, and it's so kind of compact and everything. And he was starting, you know, when you got like an 8-year-old kid there and he was going, you know. So I said to him, like, 5 more minutes. Anyway, we left, and as we were leaving, they got the first goal back. And we get back to the car, turn the radio on, literally as the third one went in. And I can't overemphasise how crushing that felt, because we'd been so dominant, hadn't we?
Yeah.
Getting 3-0 up.
There's no way it's the throwing points away, is there?
And we literally did as well, because it was the goalkeeper's fault. I don't know if it was the first or the second, but the cross comes to the back post, and Pajas must have been about 4'2". He was tiny. He was a cracking player, but he was tiny, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Westerveld judges that it's coming. He thinks he's going to head it back across goal, which is probably a fair assumption 99% of the time. But the way he gambled was ridiculous, and Pahar's just headed into an open net, yeah. And it set the tone really for Westerveld that season. 1 minute he'd make a world, and you'd be like, "What? Fantastic! That well done." And the next minute he'd be punching the ball in the back of the net at Chelsea, or there's one of Middlesbrough around this time where he gets
his stability
as
a goalkeeper. If you want to go to the top level, they don't have to be the most brilliant goalkeeper in the world. You just need to know what they're going to do.
Trust,
trust. Yeah.
It's the cliche of the spine, isn't it? Because when you think, like, we had Babel, we had Honcho, we had Hippier, and then in midfield, obviously, it's the season where Steven Gerrard really makes his mark.
Yeah.
And I'll always remain convinced that's Gary Max doing, like, you know.
Well, he says it as well, doesn't he?
Yeah. So the one thing that was missing, obviously, Owen was prolific, and Robbie Fowler got injured in pre-season, didn't he? But we didn't have any shortage of strikers, but the keeper, as Kev rightly says, you know, he could have absolutely will blinding, you know, brilliant days when he'd save everything and as a shot stopper and commanding in the box and all that, then just make stupid mistakes.
No, he made an absolutely fantastic save in the cup final from, was it Henri?
And
I was just thinking, if that goes in, that's it.
Yeah,
Arsenal won the cup.
He was that type of goalie that he had that in his locker. Yeah. But to be fair, but maybe it's us, do you know what I mean? We deify our managers and we kill our goalkeeper. Because for 10 years since Grovelaar had gone downhill, we'd had goalies like David James.
I never trusted Grovelaar either.
Well, to be fair, I think a lot of Liverpool fans feel like that.
I loved him, but I never trusted him. And you think, you know, think what we've got now, you know, it's absolute unconditional trust and love for, isn't it, for Ali. But for so long, I mean, obviously, you know, years you do to come close to that, but even he had his fallibility, didn't he?
I won't have a word said against Yeti Duda. Yeah. For, you know why? Just for that.
Big pole in our goal.
Yeah, no, just that. I've kissed our hand that saved that penalty.
Plus as well, he made the save off Shevchenko as well. But it's a mental thing with goalkeepers, isn't it? And I suppose playing in front of a stand like the Cop, where they can build you up to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, or they can, if you hear that groan or that ooh, one of them, it must be so debilitating as a goalkeeper. And look at your Alisson's give more than, I reckon if you put a blooper reel together, do you know what I mean, it'd be considerable, maybe not as considerable as most, but there's more than enough on there. But again, the thing is, he does it and 5 minutes later it's gone, he's forgotten about it, and so have we. Whereas the likes of Westerveld, we'd had James for so long. In fact, it probably worked out well for Alisson, because we had James, who was every 5 minutes, he just thought he was going to throw a clanger in. Then you'd have Westerveld, slightly less clangers, slightly more saves. Dudek, another improvement. Reina, pretty much perfect. And now Alisson, absolutely godlike status.
Somewhere in the mix, like Chris Kirkland hardly got a look in, did he?
Yeah. But,
he was potentially a decent goalkeeper. Where are we, John, in terms of the game?
We're going to September.
Still in August.
Well, we're going to September. We start September with two home wins. One against Aston Villa, 3-0, which is an Owen first half hat trick. You mentioned
David James fucking up for one of the goals as well, in true form.
And then there's a Man City game after that where we beat them 3-2. And that's another one where we're 2-0 up and coasting.
The
and then they get it back.
Volley,
to,
doesn't he,
yeah, they get about two order, then Haman scores to win. And I just remember Joe Royal being a bell end after the game in a way that was really enjoyable. Like, they got a penalty, and then he come on and moaned at the ref because he was like, the ref didn't want to give that. And I was like, we did. I remember saying, oh, the cop crowed three times, was what he said on Match of the Day.
Quite a good line, to be fair.
But he sends them down that season, which is where fair remember was that. But you know, they're getting the games done. And then two draws away at West Ham and home to Sunderland. And I remember Kevin Phillips scoring a belter.
He was on fire at that time as well. By the way, didn't he score 30 goals in three consecutive seasons?
Owen scored ours, didn't he? It was like the young and the young and the old.
The young and the mid-range probably at that time. Kevin Phillips would probably have you saying.
He was always old.
He did look it, when he
was 21, he was old.
That's the thing about this season. You'd have like teams like Sunderland, Leicester with the same.
Ipswich.
Marcus Stewart as well playing up front for them.
He scores against us at Anfield. We draw 1-1.
I think that probably speaks to the strength of the league. Whereas nowadays you've probably got a bit of a chasm for the teams getting top four and everybody else. It's probably getting a little bit closer now because there's a few more teams jumped in, probably not for the right reasons. But around this time, you would have someone like an Aston Villa or an Ipswich or a Sunderland, and they'd be going hard all season for that. And they could come to Anfield and beat
you. The way it is now.
Yeah.
If you look at the end of September, we're fourth in the table. Leicester a second, and Charlton a fifth.
Well, Charlton as well, didn't he? Got them into Europe, didn't he? Nearly got them in the Champions League.
Well, he nearly got the Liverpool job.
Is Bowyer still in the Charlton team then, or has he gone to Leeds by then?
I think he's Leeds by then, isn't he? Because we
and the bald right back of
because we tried to sign him from Leeds, didn't we?
Bowyer.
So
that was about 2003.
I have a little story with that. Gerard Houllier stopped me and Andy Baker at about 3 o'clock in the morning in Le Havre pre-season. It might have been the following season, and he asked us about Lee Bowyer. And he said,
"Really?
Yeah." He said, "What do you think? He's humming in hard." And we just said, "Look, if you say come to Liverpool," and he goes, "I'll think about it." Tell him to get stuffed. And he went, "I think you're right."
And that's what happened.
Isn't
that funny?
No word of a lie.
Fair play to him.
He's not Johnny Mackell of Liverpool FC, but he is.
That was the godlike manager, Gerard Houllier. Yeah,
he was having a stroll.
Sorry, John, you can't just throw that. Where?
Le Havre.
I know.
Near the docks.
A 3 a.m. stroll.
So you're all looking for the same thing.
I've seen Gibbons have some strolls at 3 a.m. I wouldn't be asking him any advice by the
way. He had his hands in his pockets and he goes, that's Gerard Houllier. All right, Gerard. And then he was going,
I'm thinking there was another conversation, but let's move on.
I think there was, yeah, but that's it. Let's move on. That one.
He liked my beret. I had a Le Havre beret on.
Of course. We played in the pre-season or something, was it?
Yeah, I think that was the following season, so. The start of the following season.
Yeah, when we signed.
Yeah, no one cares when it was.
We must have signed
Letalic and who's the other fella?
Because he was asking us.
Goal.
Said, no,
on goal, yeah.
That was part of the payoff, wasn't it?
No, we had to go.
I don't think he said get stuff, by the way. Something Gerard would understand.
Are we in Europe, yes?
We get through against Rapid Bucharest. Do you want to do Rapid Bucharest? Do you go to Bucharest?
Yeah, God, yeah.
We did.
Go on, do a bit of Bucharest.
My first impression was dogs, like the taxi from
dogs and kids
the airport to the centre. It was doomsday. Like there was literally packs of dogs running alongside the taxis and everything. And there'd been lots, in the run up to it. So only a few hundred of us went, wasn't it? And there was lots of warnings about this, that, and the other. You know, be streetwise and all of this. And it didn't look good. But then suddenly you come into it, and it used to have this reputation of being the Paris of the East, and it really was, that kind of central area.
We went recently when we played someone about about 8 or 9 years ago. We weren't from there, but they had to play there. I can't remember who it was. It was the drunkest I've ever been in a footy ground, basically.
Whoa, I tell you what, mate, that's some level.
I know, and I don't say that lightly.
It was fabulous. I mean, we were all in the same hotel, which I think was it called the Empire?
No, I was the Capital.
But right opposite was a bar called the Tic Tac, the Tic Tac, and it turned out to be legendary.
I was just about to say I've heard about the Tic Tac bar in Bucharest. I'm assuming it must have been off your stories on the rattle.
The fast forward is that one of Mackin's bills is now in the Museum of Liverpool. So it's the Tic Tac ticker tape. It's about
it's
9 foot
long. The
first
restaurant bill I've ever had for. That's more than a million things. I don't mean items on the bill. The cost was a million remaining.
It was a million somethings, wasn't it? L-E-I, yeah. And then when you did the time, and we'd been there for hours and hours and hours, maybe 6 hours. And when you did your calculation, it turned out it was £38. And it was literally every...
Like 20 bottles of wine on it. Everything.
Just loads.
Do you know what? It's stories like that. Because a few years later, we went to Riga, didn't we? Me and John, I'm talking about you. Went to Riga, and we thought that was like Eastern Europe, and it was, but it was sort of becoming a little bit more touristy, wasn't it? Whereas we'd heard all the stories about places like this, and but I'm talking probably within 5 years.
Oh yeah, I went to Prague in '98, just away with me. It was with music actually, and 10 years later, it's just completely different.
Everyone was going to Prague, weren't they? Probably everyone spoke English. Whereas when you guys are going today, it's at the very end of probably. Like before,
a key thing is there's the advent of budget airlines, isn't it?
Well, that's what I'm about to say. Before the budget airline kicked in,
that was the game changer.
So what? So was the 2001 then no budget airlines, or was there?
How did you remember?
Romanian airlines. We went
change of flight, weren't there? Frankfurt.
No, a direct one.
But how many go to? How many went to this? Do you reckon?
Less than 300.
Yeah. And we've got two of them here.
It's still one of my favourite trips of all time.
Yeah. At the morning of the match, I said, "All right, I've got to get a programme from this one because it'll be dead rare because no one's gone." So, got a taxi up there about 10 o'clock in the morning, just asked him, like, security guards, like, programs, and he just pointed at what looked like a little ticket off his window. So went over and said to this woman, "Any match programs, miming." Yeah. And she goes, comes back, and says, "How much?" She writes something down on a piece of paper. Went, "It's about 7 pence a program."
bought 40.
Told to keep the change.
Yeah. And then we went down the tunnel.
You come back to the hotel, didn't you?
Yeah,
you
think had you to go back to the hotel, the drop him, yeah. Then come back. Went down the tunnel, ignored the security guard who was telling me not to. And he got on the pitch. Talking to all the cleaning ladies inside the grounds. They were really nice. Then
just a gentleman job.
Canadian TV turned up, so we sang "You Never Walk Alone" on the pitch, and we were on the news that night. And then helped all their ultras put their display out in the stands.
What were the ultras like?
You've sound. Absolutely.
Yeah, there was much ado about nothing there. But you've got to tell them about your emergence wherein they, what can only be described as a butcher's coat.
It wasn't a butcher's coat. It was white with purple piping.
a posh trip. Butcher's coat.
Yeah, same trip. After we'd done the pitch business, we went back up the tunnel and saw this little doorway that said buffet, B-U-F-E-T. I thought, oh, it's got to be, hasn't it? So went in, and it was like the canteen for the ground for their staff, but it had a bar in it. So a few beers in there, a couple of bottles of wine. And there was a chef in the kitchen who had this like kitchen jacket on, short sleeves, white, purple piping, and a club crest on. So I thought,
butcher's coat.
That is the souvenir of all souvenirs. So I bought it off him for $5, and he gave me his little hat as well.
Threw the hat in for free.
Yeah, and then he gave me a photograph of himself, like a glossy, like 5x6 photo. It's nice. And it was only later on when I got back, he's reading a porno mag in the picture. Why did he give me that? So
I wore that.
It was a bit snug, you know, and I was a lot trimmer then.
He turned up in our end in this.
I turned up with a matching it and a pair of rat
matching. You look like a hot dog shorts. Seller.
Shits on a half and half scarf, that, doesn't it?
It really does.
Well, later in the conversation, I'll tell. I also did a rubbish swap in Porto, but we'll get to that one a bit later.
Right.
Just earmark. Rubbish swaps.
Rubbish swaps. Oh,
well,
it's okay.
Nico tried to outdo me in the next game, and we'll come to that when we get there.
We will come to that. We'll get into October. We start with a 3-0 defeat at Chelsea.
You didn't think this would be a 10-passer, did you, John?
I did. It took me three podcasts to think. I was like, all right, mate.
Lots of leap through a few league games here. Go, whatever. Yeah.
Well, no one's talking about getting beat 3-0 at Chelsea. It's fucking happened every year.
But that was the West Ham one. Another one, West Ham punched us.
We need to get to Old Trafford pronto, don't we? Yeah.
Well, I wanted to actually do this one because there's an international break then, and then we come back and we beat Derby away 4-0. And that was the first great performance of the season, I think, Kev. I'll talk to you. You're looking at me. That Derby one.
Clinical, it was fantastic.
The Baker goal with all the passes.
Earlier in the day, if I'm not mistaken, because I can remember the coach stopping off. I think Man United had like a midday kickoff, and they dropped points. I'm just referencing back to our delusional, exuberant belief that everything is about to change and we're going to be back in the game. They'd been on a bit of a run of like drawing a couple. I'm sure they lost to Villa, maybe somebody that morning. We got there, and the whole Pride Park thing, you know, compared to the baseball ground, it's such a horrible environment to actually go.
Sterile, I think you could call it.
I never went to baseball ground.
Baseball ground was fantastic. It was one of those great. Yeah.
Apart from the fact that you had to be 6'2" to see anything.
Yes,
the terrace was that slow.
We were on the side, weren't we? We can get into the FA Cup 1976, but. This was like, you know, and then you think, but we just took them apart, you know, from start to finish.
Amazing.
And
my favourite ever away game.
It was the most.
Did you go?
Yeah.
It was comprehensive. I can't remember who it was called. Yeah.
Bear got the fourth. That's
got a hat. That's got a hat.
That's a great goal. I mean, great shot.
We went down one name with the lads from the original Red All Over the Land Forum. So Ian Mack, Peter Evo, all Lemmy and McHale. And we went down, me and Ben. Peter Neville took us under his wing, Ward, you know, all them were on there. And just like, as I said to you at the start, I was 17, you know what I mean? And all I'd wanted was matchmates. So I'd been to away with my dad, but obviously, it's different, isn't it? It just is. But then this one, like, I felt like I was part of the away crowd.
You on a bus, like?
We had our own minibus, so whatever. In fact, Ian McHale had organised the minibus.
Oh, yeah.
So we'd gone down with all them and we'd stopped off somewhere. So even little things like that, like obviously now I've been all over the world and stopped off somewhere on the way. But then I'd never done that before. I'd gone from ours to Ewood Park.
You had to stop off on the way to there, didn't you?
Well, did your dad drives you back.
Exactly, yeah. So we'd stopped off and Peter Evo bought a bottle of Aussie White's and made blobs. So Aussie White's, warm lemonade and sugar. Fucking hell, I was just, you said before, I was being pissed in a football ground. Wow, was I fucking pissed in that ground. But I can still remember it all. Like, Heskey scores an unbelievable hat-trick. He's amazing. The one he bangs in is unreal. And the Patrick Baker goal, it finishes off a move of about 3,582 passes. It's honestly, our crowd was all laying it, and then he just bangs it in from about 35 yards. Yeah. And it just, I remember, I was right near the front, and I just remember thinking, fucking all of these things that I've wanted through coming to match since I was six.
You could have retired after that game.
But do you know what, John, that's exactly how it felt. Because we weren't used to going to cup finals.
Yeah.
Like, I'd been to the 1996 cup final, but we were saying before about how time's different as the longer you go. So 2001 to 95, so it's only, it's 96, sorry.
5 years,
yeah. It's 5 years, but I've gone from 17, from 12 to 17. So at that point I thought, fucking hell, if I don't see anything else in my life, this will be enough for me. Because I'd have gone to the match with all my mates. We'd stopped off. I was fucking bladders, and Liverpool had absolutely dismantled.
That's a low bar, Kev. That is a low bar of expectation.
But do you know what? That's the expectation levels I had at that time.
Fancy your first cup final being the worst cup final
of all time
ever played.
Hey, tell me about it. Hey, as a 12-year-old me.
Yeah, at least I went to Bolton.
Well, I had the ticket for Bolton, but I was playing footy for the school in Ireland, so I ended up over there.
Yeah.
That goal went in Cantona's goal, so I must have been, I'd have been 11 at the time, and I swear, I was right behind the goal the other end, and I sat down and just started crying uncontrollably. Literally, I don't mean like a few tears, I mean like I was sobbing like a little baby. And all
you
I
never got on telly.
Honestly, I was that far back in the old Wembley, you wouldn't be able to see me anyway. And all I remember is loads of fellas coming down and doing what I'd do to a kid now, saying, "Don't worry, lad, we'll be back, we'll be back." And I remember thinking, "Fuck off, yous might think we'll be back." But like, we haven't won a league for 6 years, which is nothing now, is it? Which is nothing now. But at the time, to me, it was a lifetime ago. And then went like being outside the ground, and my dad going, "Lad, you have to stop crying." I swear, I must have got so much staff before I stopped fucking bawling my eyes. That's how disappointed I was. Yeah. And we didn't get to another cup final until this season. So when that derby game happened, I remember thinking, well, cup finals are none of our business, really. We hadn't been to them for that long, which I know it's a relatively short space of time in the overall. But to me, as a 17-year-old kid, it was a third of my life.
Yeah. And it was as emphatic a victory away from home as we had for a long,
honestly,
long time.
I still look back on that day as a great day. Fantastic.
Yeah. One of my favourite ever cup ties, not the final, comes in this season as well. We'll
Leeds.
Leeds. Yeah. Okay.
What a day.
There's a section for Leeds, don't you worry, but I can almost taste the Aussie White, so I'm going to tell him that story. Anyway, we went 4-0 at Anfield following that derby one. We beat Leicester, Slovan Liberec, but the one I want to do is Everton, the Nicky Barmby derby.
Who wants to go first?
Vitriol, wasn't it?
Just one of the greatest goals ever scored.
Well, it's worth probably pointing out that by then the derby has well and truly become poisonous. So it's been.
Do you think that's the start of it?
No, it's before. No, that's before. That season's almost the peak of it, you know, because when we get onto the one later on, fuck me, that was poisonous.
But at that point,
that was where
it was really, really apparent, you know. Prior to that, it's been death by a thousand cuts. It's been increasing and increasing, hasn't it? And there's a theory that's going to be in relation to the comparative demise. So in 93-94, they survive against Wimbledon on the last day.
Then Bolton.
Then it's going downhill, and obviously, you know, that whole conspiracy theory starts that it's not down to them being badly managed or buying the wrong players. It's down to us. But remember that the Nicky Barmby one, and obviously the fact that he used to play for them, you know, it clearly is, you know, in my mind, it's one of the most toxic atmospheres I'd ever experienced as a derby up to that point.
I agree, but I loved it since then.
Oh, you love it?
I love games with that amount of vitriol in there. I love going to Old Trafford.
Yeah. And we'll talk about Old Trafford in a minute, but what you want, you know, that is the thing that elevates those games to being beyond being just, you know, a game of footy. You want to experience that thing of real undiluted hatred. And it's never better than when you're in that little group of away fans that are that all directed at you.
Yeah.
I love that. I can't tell you how much I love it.
It's one of the best feelings ever.
But it, that game in particular, like it, you know, they, that was a step up from, you know, the levels that we'd known before. And the fact that he scored, it was the opening goal, wasn't it?
It was the opening goal.
I forgot. Just hit him really on the head.
No, it's a great idea. So, Nicky Barnby in this season, obviously signing him, but they couldn't imagine it happening now. It couldn't happen now because their hierarchy is so embedded in all the business, it wouldn't happen.
It wouldn't happen now because they haven't got any players we'd ever dream of signing.
I don't know, I'd have Onana just to make him play keep-ups in the street or something, you know what I mean? Just for the laugh about it. But we signed Nicky Barnby that summer and he's forgotten about by a lot of Liverpool fans because obviously I love this season. He's definitely not by me. And he very much fades at the second half of the season. But you know, in the first half, we've gone through a few games there, like Liberec away and Olympiacos away. But he scores the goals.
Yeah.
He scores goals in games, not to make it 3-0 or 4-0. He's scoring the first goals in them games. And
he gets to win them.
Or the decisive goal.
He was a really... For me, he was a throwback to a Peter Beardsley type of player. He was a bit more technical, but wasn't as quick. By God, you knew he had the ball. And when he scored, he doesn't get 10 goals that season. No, he doesn't.
It's not far off, you know.
But what I mean is, he gets 8 or 9 in the season. But he probably doesn't score after Christmas. But the goals that
I'm pretty sure he got. He had a couple of bad knocks. And we don't see him again. That, you know, maybe towards the end of the season.
He'd already scored probably 3 or 4 by this point.
And he was out for months, you know.
Well, he does the Everton one. And the best thing about it is he celebrates like we celebrated. Yeah, yeah. He was delighted to have given it to them. The only way it could have been better if he'd somehow managed to run in front of their fans. But I don't blame him because, to be fair, he may well have died if he did. Because as we said before, the vitriol for him was, it was so wild.
Poisonous, yeah.
And it was before all social media style of, I wish he was dead and all that. You had to shout it to somebody who was in the same vicinity as you, do you know what I mean? Yeah. You had to shout it to people and other people could hear you. You can shout it to Ether on Twitter and tell people you want them to die of cancer and all this type of shit, and there's no comeback from it. That day, they had to shout it, and they had the backing of everyone around, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had to shout it in front of other people, and they fucking meant it as well. And that was, honestly, that goal will... Well, on my dying day, that'll be a goal. I
can remember. I think I'm right in that they equalised.
Yeah, Kevin.
That's bad because I forgot that until I watched it back earlier today. Like, because in my head, Nicky Barnby scores, then we just win. But Kev Campbell equalised.
Did you see after he scores as well? Two lads jump up on the front row of the cop.
Yeah.
Fucking madness, dude. Like, their ends is wishing one of our players dead, and there's two of their fans standing on the front row of the cop. And that wasn't unusual then. Yeah. But
I remember
that
an Everton fan by me.
Yeah, I think this season is the turning point. You may have had one or two in their ends, but you had less and less people willing to jump up and shout about it. And nowadays,
well, I was in the Gladys Street for the away one coming up.
Did you jump up like?
Did for the Gary Mack goal.
How could you not?
We behaved till then. Yeah.
I'd already nearly been arrested by then. I was in Ireland.
Well, yeah.
We'll come on to that as well. But he does. Kev Campbell gets the equaliser, which I always forget because in my head, it's a Barnby one.
Even Kevin Campbell being
a Paddy Berger penalty, isn't there?
Yeah. Wins it 3-1, I think.
That sealed this. Who scored in between?
I can't remember. No. Oh, yeah, I've got notes.
It doesn't matter. I know we have 2-1 up.
When you say it, I
remember. I remember doing
it. It is a bit of Heskey, well done. Emma Heskey.
Undercooked shot, bit of a scuffer.
It is. It's from about 25 yards out, and he sort of bends it with his right foot, where he's got like no chance of ever scoring that goal.
It
must be Paul Gerrard, mustn't it? And it goes under his arms. That's what it was.
But the penalty is the one where you're doing somersaults and going berserk.
I think
it's our first Anfield win in sometime, like, you know. And if it's not, it's one of only two or three in a long period.
Kev Campbell had scored the winner the year before.
99, yeah.
The year before.
I had a conversation with Kevin Campbell. So I seen him at a dinner thing, and he was there on another table. He wasn't speaking or not. He was just as a guest with somebody else. And you know what?
He was just minding his own business.
Honestly, what a fucking sound fella, because that's exactly what he was doing. And I said, you fucking cunt. Yeah. I still haven't forgot that fucking goal. He said, you want a many, son. And he's Jan. I've got pictures of me. I've got him in a headlock, like pretend to punch him. And then he's got one of me.
He's perfectly exactly surprised to me, honestly, Kev Campbell.
Honestly, he's an absolute gentleman, you know, really, really nice fella.
Do you know what? Let's not personalise them in a positive way.
We don't want to humanise the bastards, do we?
We're not here to do that.
So there we go. That was part one. Thanks a lot to the Kevs. And, of course, to John Macken for joining me on the rooftop of Matau. It was a lovely sunny day. It was really, really good fun. It's probably, push comes to shove, my favourite season as well, although I might change my mind when I do a few of the other ones. But part two to, I don't even know how many. I think we're going to split it into four in the end. As I say, we recorded it in one hit, but I think it'll end up being four parts. So parts two to four, let's say, will be out over the next few weeks for Anfield Rap subscribers. So if that's not you yet, maybe consider it. Download the app, you will get some free tokens, as I mentioned before, or you can go straight to theanfieldrap.com/subscribe if you want to dive in and get all this, and of course all the other fantastic content that you get from the Anfield Rap. It's going to be a great series. I'm really looking forward to it. We've only recorded 2001 so far, but all the other ones, you know, I'm really keen to do, and this just whetted my appetite. So hope you enjoyed that. Hope you enjoyed what's to come, and as I say, do support the Anfield Rap in any way that you can. Up the Reds. Thank you. Sports Social Podcast Network.